Good morning. Our time is now 6 minutes after 9 o'clock, and welcome to the first of two forums that we'll be offering on WHKP leading up to the November 4th general election. Now, today's forum will feature the two candidates for North Carolina State Senate for that state Senate seat, district number 48. That includes Henderson County, Transylvania County, part of Buncombe Counties, and the two candidates are the incumbent state senator, Republican Tom Apodaca, and his Democrat challenger, Rick Wood. Later in the forum, listeners can call in with questions. And the first thing we'll be doing, though, is asking the candidates to briefly tell us something about themselves and why they should be elected to the North Carolina State Senate. And that will include, as we said, incumbent state senator Tom Apodaca and his Democratic opponent, Rick Wood, and we say good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
On a rainy kind of morning, a stormy kind of morning, but on this forum this morning, we'll start with you, Rick Wood. Tell us something about yourself and your candidacy and why you want to be elected to the North Carolina State Senate.
I'm a retired educator. I taught school for 40 years. This last 17 years at West Henderson High School here in Henderson County. I've served the last 6 years on the Henderson County Board of Public Education. I was born in Alabama, grew up in a family of educators. My mother and father were both educators. Graduated from Auburn University and started a 40-year teaching and coaching career there just outside of Auburn, and retired in 2006 at West Henderson High School. I enjoyed very much teaching and especially coaching high school basketball, and decided to run for the state Senate a little over a year ago when I saw what was happening to our public school system, seeing that at firsthand as a school board member, seeing the cuts that were taking place in Raleigh and the stress that we were having on our school system, and thought that somebody needed to step up and offer an option to the way things were being done.
Okay. Thank you, Rick Wood. Tom Apodaca, good morning. You've been in the state Senate now, I think, for 12 years?
Yeah, this is the 12th year.
Okay, this is the 12th year. Tell us about yourself and why you want to be elected to another term.
Well, I finished Cullowhee in 1980. I lost 100 years there. And met Lisa there. We were married, and we both came to Hendersonville. I came with the Great Northwestern Bank, and Lisa came over and was a third-grade school teacher at Dana. So we put our roots down here in Henderson County and have been just fallen in love with this area, and we call it home. We have two children, or they're not children, two young men now, and Brandon's 31, Tate's 26, somewhere in that area. I may have gotten it off a year, but we're very proud of them. They're both products of public schools, as Lisa and I are, and we just love this area. We think there's no better area. We're seeing this area grow. It is getting recognized across the state as a growth area, and there are many, many folks wanting to come to this area, and I think the future is very bright for us.
Thank you, Tom Apodaca. Rick Wood, we'll start with you. You've been a very vocal critic of the way the North Carolina General Assembly, with the Republicans in the majority, is handling spending, taxes, and the budget. Now, what are they doing wrong, and what would you do differently in the General Assembly?
Larry, before I get into that, I do want to mention my wife, Beverly. We've been married for 43 years. She also was a public school teacher for 41 years. She's from South Buncombe County and grew up there. Yes, I have been a vocal critic of some of the actions of the North Carolina General Assembly, particularly in regards to public education. We are now, last time I checked, 48th in the nation in per pupil funding. I know Senator Apodaca likes to say that we're spending more for public education. He ran a full-page ad in the local papers in 2013 that said we were spending more, but he failed to mention that the state had several thousand more students. And so if you have more students and you're spending just a little bit more, you're really getting behind, and we're getting behind in a lot of ways, particularly cuts in textbook funding. the last 4 years to the point that many of our students are not even given textbooks by their teachers. $23 million the last 3 years is the average, a big drop from $111 million in 2009-2010. That's an average of $14.20 per student. And we've cut, since 2013, 5,200 teaching positions have been cut, yet we have 17,000 more students. And teacher assistants have been cut by $120 million, 3,800 positions cut in 2013, and wanted to cut all the second and third grade teaching positions this past year in the Senate budget proposal. So there are a lot of things that have been cut, but I'll stop and give Senator Apodaca a chance to respond.
Okay, now what we're talking about here basically is spending, taxes, and the budget and action that took place, primarily in the last session of the General Assembly. You were there, Tom Apodaca, and you were involved in a great deal of this. How do you respond to Rick Wood?
Well, let's go back to 2010 at that election, and we came in 2011, first time in 140 years that the Republicans had controlled the House and the Senate. When we came in, we had a $2.5 billion budget deficit. Our state insurance plan was $600 million in the hole, and our pension plan had not been funded at 100% for the last 4 or 5 years. Oh, yeah, and by the way, in 2010 budget, the Democrats cut the textbook funding down to $2.5 million from the figure we heard earlier of $100 million. So it's $2.5 million funded in 2010, and we're 10 times that now. So we have addressed that. Yes, I did run an ad last year saying that K-12 educational spending was right at $7.9 billion. Well, I'm happy to report this year it's $8.2 billion. So no matter how you look at it, spending on education has increased. The largest teacher cuts, if you'll go back, came in 2008. They did not come in 2012 and 13, as mentioned. That was an accounting method on the $500 million we see so much about that was not a cut. It was a budgeting item that was brought forward, and another item for negative reserves, as they call it, where they like to give money and take half of it back. So we said, in fairness for budgeting, just get that off the books. It is not a dollar amount. So when we look on TV and all, and we see that $500,000 there, and then we equate it to jobs, then yes, that you, if you want to go that way, but it's actually no dollars.
I guess it was inevitable that we'd be talking about education spending, because I know this has been a big issue in the campaign. Let's specifically talk here about something that Rick Wood brought up, Senator Apodaca. Let me ask you to respond to what he was talking about with regard to textbook funding.
Yes.
If the state doesn't pay for them, the local school systems don't, parents have to.
Sure.
So what's the situation with textbook funding?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it was cut in 2010 and 11 to $2.5 million total. That's the largest cut in the history of North Carolina. We have gradually built it up. We're around $25 million now. But we're also facing another occurrence coming, and in essence, 17 and 18, when we switch over to e-books. So we've got to be careful spending a lot of money now on books that are going to be antiquated in 2 to 3 years. Plus, a lot of books... Now, where you and I went to school, we had a textbook. Now, talking to teachers and administrators, you have workbooks, and they're able to make copies of that and send them home. From my conversations with my superintendents, this is a problem that they're able to handle. It's not a huge issue, but they're able to get through it. Of course, everybody would like to have brand new books every year. But we got to remember, and I don't want us to lose sight of what we've come through the last 10 years. The worst economic time since the Great Depression. So we are pulling out of it, and I think the future, as I said earlier, is bright.
Democrat Rick Wood, are you satisfied with his comments there on textbook spending?
Not at all, Larry. Not at all. I repeat what I said. The last 3 years, they averaged $23 million per year, a big drop from $111 million in 2009-2010, $14.26 per student. And I've had many teachers to tell me that that is a very difficult thing when you can't give your students a textbook to take home with them to do homework. And I know I hear this about we're going to e-books and we're going to that, but they're not funding us from Raleigh the money to make that transition. In the meantime, we have to have textbooks. And back on the tax cut thing, one of the reasons that we don't have money in our state now is because of the 2013 tax reform bill, which took so much money out of our state. They really didn't have the money to give teachers a raise this year, and they had to do things like take it from reserve, try to get more from the lottery, cut teacher assistance further, and do things that, that really was not good for our state. So the tax bill, as a matter of fact, on October 11th, edition of the Greensboro News and Record, Lee Roberts, the state budget director, announced that state revenue is down $313 million for the first 3 months of the new fiscal year. That's July, August, and September, as compared to last year. The state is on track for a $1 billion deficit for fiscal year 2014-15. That illustrates that the tax cuts, which my opponent brags about, will leave our state $1 billion shortfall when they meet next year to appropriate a new budget. That will mean even more cuts to our local schools.
A lot of the things,
Tom, Larry, I got to interrupt there.
That's fine. What I was going to say is a lot of the things that were done in the General Assembly the last session were done to increase revenue in North Carolina. Will that eventually happen, or feel free to respond to what he said?
It will, and Lee Roberts also spoke this week, as in the day before yesterday, when he said he was pleased with what he was seeing, and that we are 98% of budget amount and revenues allotted for budgeting. So I think 98% is a pretty good figure. There's nowhere in the world it's going to be whatever was tossed out there by the budget tax office down in Durham that is a nonprofit. But we have made changes, and those changes hadn't even hit yet. They come into effect this year. So you really can't say you don't have the money when you allocated last year, because the tax changes take effect this year and really won't be realized until April of 2015.
It's a good point. A lot of those things have not kicked in yet. Now, another thing that came up in comments that you were making, Rick Wood, that was about teacher pay, and I know that's been a big issue. We saw a lot of discussion, a lot of debate on that in the last session of the General Assembly. Went all over the map, too, before it was finally resolved. Mm-hmm. Tom Apodaca, are you comfortable with what happened as far as teacher pay is concerned?
Yes, I'm very pleased, Larry. We were at 48th, 49th. Those numbers were tossed around. And with our new teacher pay plan, we're at 31st in the country. And I think that is a substantial improvement. Also, in a region where we like to look at things, in the southeastern region, we were like 8th or 9th, and now we're like 2nd or 3rd moving up. And I think we did the right thing. I think the folks we really had to look at first were our new teachers, the ones that had been there from 0 to 8 to 10 years. They had not had a raise one, and some of them were stuck around $30,000. So I think getting them up to $35,000 and moving them up as quickly as possible to get the base salaries up was a very good move on the General Assembly's part.
No, we've got folks listening that are going to
Larry,
want to comment.
Can I respond to that?
You sure can. I'm going to let you to in just a minute. What I was going to say is we've got folks listening who would like to ask questions. We will do that at the bottom of the hour starting about 9:30. Now, Rick Wood, it's all yours.
Yeah, I want to respond to the comment about teacher pay. And where was the teacher pay at the end of 2013? They said they didn't have money to have a teacher pay. All of a sudden, in election year in 2014, all the talk was about teacher pay. Certainly we needed, our teachers needed the teacher pay. But all of our teachers, not just our young teachers, our veteran teachers who have toiled in the classroom for years and years, who are now the head of some of our committees, who are mentoring our young teachers, they were left out primarily with this pay, this so-called historic pay raise, which wasn't historic. Let me give you the most graphic example a 29-year veteran teacher this year is taking home a grand total of $14.30 more per month. Now, that's not what we should be doing for our teachers, and they haven't got a significant raise in 6 years. But the teachers are not just wanting a raise. They're wanting to be respected. They're wanting to have their teacher assistants. They're wanting textbooks. They're wanting other things that they need to do their job. And they don't want their class sizes to go up. And they're going up. Class sizes are going up because of cuts from Raleigh. And also, driver's education funding has been eliminated. How do you justify doing away with state funding for driver's education? Our parents may have to pay as much as $300 a year to have their students in driver's ed. Driver's ed is still required, but the state's going to stop paying for it.
Tom Avadaka, I'll never forget, I had to go through driver's ed before I got my first driver's license, and you probably did too.
Exactly.
Did y'all cut out funding for driver's ed?
We moved it over. We're partially taking it out going forward. It's something that's still being discussed. It hasn't been finalized yet. So that is something that will be worked on. And, you know, there's a lot of questions. Is it the state's responsibility to teach driver's ed? Or is it the family, the parent, the child? So, yeah, that is an issue. My children, we had to pay to have them go to driver's ed because it was such a long wait in order for them to get in to the driver's ed system. So, you know, that is what it is.
Okay, talking about education, too, another big issue in the General Assembly this last time had been funding for teachers' assistants. And I know that that became an issue. Tom Apodaca, I'll address this to you. Mm-hmm. We had heard the comment and seen a news report come out of Raleigh that the money budgeted for teachers' assistants was sometimes diverted by local school systems and used for other things. Can you shed some light on that or tell us what the General Assembly did as far as teachers' assistants are concerned?
Yeah, Larry, thank you. And that we did find that out, that local school boards and such were using those monies for other purposes other than a teacher's assistant. And as we dug down into it, it came out to be a figure of about $100 million. They were taking for teacher's assistants and placing it into other school activities. That's why a lot of us signed on to a bill to make sure 51% of all monies we allocated went to the classroom, because we have so many administrations top-heavy in administration or paying administrators so much that teachers were suffering. And another thing on class size that I find interesting, in this year's budget, we actually reduced the class size for K-3. We are paying 17 children per classroom. And then for first and second, I believe third, kindergarten's 18 students. So we actually reduced the number of students in the classroom. And my question there is, well, what are they doing with the money? We did allocate it to cut the classroom size, and then I hear the folks out in administration say, oh, we're having enlarged classrooms.
Okay, Rick Wood, I guess to give you an opportunity to answer that and respond to it, because that's a lot to respond to, part of that would be, are local school systems actually diverting some of the money that the General Assembly appropriates?
I know here in Henderson County we've had to divert a little bit of that to get to hire some more teachers to keep our class sizes at a reasonable length because of the cuts from Raleigh. But we have lost 62 teacher assistants have been lost in the last 5 years in Henderson County Public Schools. But we've gained between 300 and 400 students. So we have been losing teacher assistants. And by 100 teacher assistant cuts of $120 million statewide in 3,800 positions were cut in 2013. And further, Senator Apodaca and the leadership in the Senate proposed to pay for the teacher pay raise to cut out all teacher assistants in the entire state in grades second and third, to eliminate them all, cut them.
And but that wasn't done. So how can you tell that didn't happen?
Let me finish. It wasn't done because the House was more reasonable. They had better ideas. And you had to compromise. But your idea, Senator Apodaca, first was to eliminate all second and third grade teachers. You know that.
I never once said we were going to eliminate second and third grade teachers. Where in the world are you coming up with that? You mean teacher's assistants?
Teacher assistants.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You said second and third grade teachers.
Teacher assistants.
Okay.
Were you in favor of eliminating those assistants?
No, it was part of the budget process. We also proposed an 11% raise for teachers. And so when you do budgeted between the two branches and the House and the Senate, you negotiate. So you set your parameters and negotiate. My wife, 5 years ago, did not have an assistant in Henderson County, and she taught third grade. They have one assistant for the whole third grade. So this is not a new phenomenon that has just come upon us. I want classroom teachers. That's what I want, as many classroom teachers as I can possibly get.
Rick Wood?
I want good classroom teachers, and they need in the elementary grades good teaching assistants to support them. There are more needs these days than ever before of our elementary teachers, more special needs students. And this Read to Achieve program that came from the state, which has been very difficult on our teachers to do all the things they have to do, they wanted to take away their teacher assistants in the third grade and still have all the requirements. These teacher assistants are vital. They are truly teaching assistants. I know my opponent doesn't believe they're that important, but I do.
Response, please. I am so glad he mentioned Read to Achieve, because that is a great program. We're seeing wonderful progress with it, and we just can't take the attitude anymore that we can send children down the line without reading. We just have to have our children being able to read when they leave the third grade. Because studies show you can predict the number of prisons you need 10 years out from third grade based on the ability of a third grader to read. So us taking that data, we made a move to concentrate on teaching children to read. Our summer camps have even gotten great write-ups from the News and Observer and the Asheville Citizen Times, of all places. So we're excited about the potential of that, and we are putting folks in the classroom to assist, reading folks to assist with this. So we think it's a great program.
Larry, on Read to Achieve, there is nobody disagrees with the importance of being able to read by the end of the third grade. Our educators here in Henderson County and Transylvania and Buncombe County have known that for years and have been working on that. But they threw a curveball to our teachers that put all this legislation that was had to do all these portfolios. Our teachers didn't have time to really teach reading or other subjects because of all the paperwork they had to do. And so, you know, nobody disagrees with reading. Having to read by the end of the third grade is so vital. It's just how you go about achieving it.
Education, a huge issue in this race for the North Carolina State Senate. What we'll do is take a break here and bring people up to date on the weather. Got a stormy situation here in the area today. And when we continue with the forum between State Senator Tom Apodaca and his challenger, Rick Wood, when we return in just a moment, we'll open up our telephone lines to callers. And callers, number to call will be 693-9457, 693-WHKP. And let me emphasize, go ahead and ask your question. Then we won't have time for a follow-up question because we want to give as many callers as possible an opportunity to get through. So go ahead and get ready with your phone calls, and we'll start that right after the weather. This is our forum this morning between State Senator Tom Apodaca, running for another term in the North Carolina State Senate, the State Senate District 48, and his Democrat challenger, Rick Wood. And, of course, this part of the program, we're opening up our telephone lines. Do we have a caller in there, Tyler, ready with a question or a comment this morning? Go ahead, caller, with your question for our candidates this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Carl Johnson. I'm from Hendersonville. And I would like to ask, would you or did you vote for school vouchers and why?
There you've got the question, Senator Apodaca. Did you vote for school vouchers?
Yes, I did. It was in the budget 2 years ago. It was one of the items in. It will not affect our area. It was a $10 million program to go into, I think, mainly inner-city schools that were failing to give poverty-level students another option, their families an option, to go to additional schools. It was copied off the model out of New Orleans, Louisiana, that has been so successful for Governor Jindal there. Wasn't that wild about it, but it was something the House really wanted to do. So during the budget negotiations, that did stay in. Yes.
Rick, would you like to respond?
Yes, definitely. I am strongly opposed to vouchers. That's the use of public funds to provide vouchers for opportunity scholarships for children to attend private schools. It's a bad idea and probably unconstitutional. Little accountability for what happens to school vouchers. In the first year of the vouchers being given out this year, the school who received the most money, $90,000 for 43 students, was Greensboro Islamic Academy. We don't know what that school teaches. Senator, should our tax dollars be going to schools like that?
I'll give you a quick chance to respond.
Well, a quick answer to him, if he doesn't know what the school's doing, I can't answer that. It's my understanding they do an excellent job teaching the STEM areas. I saw one on 60 Minutes owned by an Islamic young man that's taken the country by storm and showing some of the best results of anyone. I'm not there. But you can also, and I noticed one time in the paper, someone said not only Islamics, but Christian schools. So are we saying Christian schools aren't allowed to do that also? I think this is something worth to look at. And these aren't regular children. These are impoverished children that have no opportunities, that have no other options. So why should we go against them so hard? I don't understand why the other side just dislikes poor children so much.
I think we've got another caller in there. We do not have another caller yet. Okay. Callers, the lines are open and available, 693-9457.
Larry, I don't know
his response.
Yes, I don't know why we're pushing for things like vouchers, which are probably going to be found against the state constitution of North Carolina. Why do we want to spend taxpayer dollars defending legislation that is unconstitutional, probably? I just don't understand it. And I don't think we should be spending taxpayer dollars on private schools that have no accountability.
Okay, we've got another caller ready. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your question and your comment for our two state Senate candidates. Good morning.
Good morning. Do you believe that the state or the local school board here in Henderson County should set the school's calendars?
Okay, we'll start with you, Rick Wood, on this one. Should
well, this is a pet peeve of mine. And being on the school board, this has been a frustrating thing for us, but because until the state started setting our school calendar for us, telling when we couldn't start school by a certain time and we had to be through by a certain time, a committee of educators, parents, administrators, teachers set the school calendar based on what was best for local school areas, knowing the weather and so forth. But then the state, under the leadership of Senator Apodaca, he's been one of the primary pushers to keep the state setting our calendar. Now, that's not giving our local school boards local control that we need. And I want to hear why he continues to want to set our school calendar. It's not for the best for education. It's best for something, maybe the tourist industry or something. I don't know what his reason. I'll let him answer that.
Tom Apodaca, are you in favor of the state controlling the school calendar?
I am in favor of the state setting dates of when a school can start and go. What they do in between is up to the local boards. And let's be realistic here. Money doesn't come out of heaven. It doesn't fall out of the sky. Money comes from tax revenues. Tax revenues come from jobs, from businesses. We have well over 80 summer camps within our region that gained an extra week of camp by this bill being able to go forth. On the coast, we had many, many tourism dollars come in. Those are monies that come in that allow us to fund our schools, that allow us to pay our teachers, and we've got to do that. We had Greenville, North Carolina, starting school August the 3rd. They had not had a snow day in 35 years. So it was being abused. So, yes, and we did build into that law for the counties that have a lot of adverse weather can get a waiver. And our northern counties qualify for that. Yeah, I'm proud of this bill, and as long as I'm down there, I'll fight to keep it.
We may be right on the borderline between one that gets a lot of bad weather and one that doesn't. Right? If that happens, can Henderson County qualify for a waiver?
It is set in the law the way that it's automatically done over a three-year period, how many days the school system misses.
Now, Larry, a quick response. This is a great example of where I would bring different priorities to Raleigh. His priorities, he just got through telling you, are the summer camps and the tourist industry. My priorities will be the children and what's best for the education of the children of our state.
Okay, I think we've got another caller here with another question for our Senate candidates this morning. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your question this morning. Good morning.
Yes, I was very pleased with the passage of what I think is the common sense requirement of showing a photo of voter ID. I'm interested in the candidate's position on maintaining and preserving that law.
Now, we are outside the field of education here, but voter ID, Tom Apodaca?
Well, there are a whole lot more to being a state senator than it is K-12 education. I think this is very important. I think voter ID is something we've needed for years. I think the public wanted it, and I think it's a great law, and I totally support it.
See, he always talks about the voter ID part of it. I have no problem with if everybody is provided with a proper ID, easy to get, I have no problem with showing an ID to vote. But he doesn't talk about the other parts, doing away with the 16 and 17-year-olds being able to pre-register to vote in their schools, to being able to do away with same-day registration and early voting, to be able to make it more difficult for some people to vote, especially some of our elderly, have a hard time. They don't have driver's license, so they're going to be needed to be able to get IDs sponsored by by the state. So there are parts of the voter ID bill. They also did away with 7 days of early voting, which was very popular in North Carolina. Did away with Sunday early voting. So there's a lot of things there that seem to be aimed at trying to limit the voting by certain groups of people rather than just getting a voter ID. Nothing wrong with a voter ID.
Larry, I can respond to that, please. Number one, we're paying for the voter ID. It has to be an official North Carolina ID issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles at no cost to the voter. The other thing is we talk about the 16 to 17-year-olds. When we talked with our Board of Elections folks, they said those folks were hard to keep track of going forward. It's not going to be that hard for someone when they turn 18 to get their registration done to vote. We don't feel like that. Elderly voters, we feel like our absentee ballot is perfect for the elderly. We worked. As a matter of fact, we called Beverly Cunningham here. We also talked to some of our local nursing homes in order to make it easy. But one I really want to talk about is the 7-day early voting. We hear how that was cut. That was not cut. What was done is the days it can be offered were cut back, but the hours remained the same. Now, what does that mean? That means you're going to see voting places open to 8, 9, 9:30 at night during early voting, which is wonderful for working people. Working people to get out to vote, to make it easier for them. The ones that pay, taxes and, work every day and come home, they'll be able to get their vote done without having to take off work. So we think this is an excellent idea. And let me say, it's been held up by the courts. One court ruled the Fourth Circuit, but it was entered by the Supreme Court last week. So
now, same-day registration was cut out.
It was. It was. That in itself can lend itself to be the most tricky part of who the voter really is. Because if you look at what they had to present to come in and vote, it was scary how lenient that was. And there needs to be time to make sure this person is. Because, we fought wars over the ability and rights to vote. And I think to protect that sanctity is vital.
Rick Woods?
I would like to ask Senator Apodaca, part of the justification for putting in this these voting changes, or as some people call it, voter suppression, was to cut down on voter fraud. I would like to him to tell me how many cases of prosecution, successful prosecution of voter fraud, there's been in North Carolina in the last 2 years.
I'm very familiar with what was happening down in Pembroke, and I don't think that's been settled yet. But it's hard for me to believe anybody that's lived in Western North Carolina any time at all hadn't been familiar with what used to go on in Madison County up until 4 or 5 years ago with voter fraud. It was just a way of life over there. So to hear that it's not a problem, no, it is a problem. But it is funny, the guy that was in charge of the Board of Elections for the state lived in Madison County. Coincidence? Maybe.
How many? He didn't answer me.
While we're waiting on another call from our callers, and our lines are open at the moment, 693-9457, 693-9457. Let me ask you, and I'll start with you, Tom Apodaca. Yeah. Medicaid is a big issue and going to become probably a big issue.
Yeah.
North Carolina General Assembly is going to have to deal with Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you feel about that.
Larry, we have been dealing with Medicaid. That is the fastest growing item in our budget. And, I mean, we could do so many wonderful things with education, our judicial system, and others if we didn't have to deal with Medicaid. And we are trying to get control of Medicaid. You know, people say, why don't you expand Medicaid? Well, our Medicaid system in North Carolina is broken. And I saw Representative Ramsey gave a great example the other night. He said it's like a bucket with holes in it. You keep dumping water in it, the water's going to run out of the holes. Well, until we get that bucket sealed up, I don't see any way in the world we can expand an already broken system and charge it back to the taxpayers of North Carolina and the United States. So the facts are we've already put an additional $2 billion into Medicaid over the last 4 years. So, yes, we're expanding on our own, but we're not going to take, you know, the Obama mandate to expand it.
Okay, how do you feel about that?
This is another clear difference between Senator Apodaca and myself, because I would definitely expand Medicaid. North Carolina will lose $51 billion in federal payments over the next decade. According to Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, hospitals would have gotten $11.3 billion of that. It will cost 23,000 health care jobs and health care to people who need it most. We will deny health insurance to over 400,000 of our fellow residents. We've paid these federal taxes. They're going to be going to other states. It's 100% funded for 3 years and 90% after that. I think it was a bad mistake, and I would vote differently on that.
When you hear about things that are 100% funded, you know at some point the buck is going to be passed down to local and state governments, Tom Apodaca. Is that the way you feel about this?
Oh, absolutely. And we've already had to come across cost of over $200 million for Obamacare to be implemented within the state of North Carolina, changing various regs and regulations and dealing with the exchange, the North Carolina exchange. You know, it boils down to this, Larry. It is a business decision. My background's business. I look at things from a business perspective because good business creates good jobs. And good jobs creates good tax revenues.
Let me ask you about another thing that was done in this year's session of the General Assembly, Tom Apodaca, that was not the most popular thing that the legislature did, abolishing the privilege tax. Now, with the privilege tax going away, looking at the city of Hendersonville, they're going to lose well over $300,000 in revenue. What was the reason? Give us the thinking when the privilege tax was.
Here again, Larry, a privilege tax was initially put in as a way for municipalities to know what particular businesses were in their municipalities. Okay. As it grew older, municipalities found a way to attach on a business tax. And I remember when this happened because I got a letter from the city. They found a way to attach revenues of a particular operation and base the tax on revenues. It was never made for that. It was made as a registration fee on businesses. So when they found a way to circumvent the law and go around and charge large grocery stores, your Walmart stores, and they even tried to hit me with my travel agency and base it on sales. That was astronomical and would have put many businesses out. So what we were called upon is to look at that law and see what was fair. And this next long session, whether I'm there or Mr. Wood's there, that is something that's going to be taken up. They were given a stay for a year. And so we're going to look at that.
So that's going to be in the next session, Rick Wood. If you're elected, how do you feel about the privilege tax?
I've got to learn more about it. That's one issue that I've been doing a lot of studying in the last several months, getting ready to serve in Raleigh. And that's one of the issues that I've got to study some more to know what I'm going to, how I will vote on it. But I do know that there are a lot of taxes that have been added or not taken away from this tax overhaul bill in 2013 that's going to cause a lot of North Carolinians, when they fill out their 2014 taxes, are going to find, instead of a tax cut, they're going to overall have a tax increase for about 70-80% of North Carolinians.
Oh, that's just that, not true.
That's well, a lot. That's something that's not being talked about a lot. All you saw was the reduction in the corporate and individual income tax, more so for the wealthy than the middle class. But when you take away the earned income tax credit, for example, that's been going to be taken away, and some other things, a lot of people are going to be paying more in taxes, tax increase instead of a tax cut.
Larry, that's just categorically not
true. I was going to say, are my taxes going to go
yeah,
up?
Yeah, your taxes, and you call me. You call me after you fill them out, because the data I've seen is over 85% of North Carolinians are going to have a lower tax bill when this is implemented. Also, the earned income tax credit is gotten by those who have no income. So it's just an additional income stream for them, another revenue item for the unemployed.
Let me ask you about something that was a big issue. You raised this, Tom Apodaca, and I know that it's been a critical issue facing the General Assembly, the state health plan. The state health plan has been on the verge of collapse because so much money was involved. What's the situation with the state health plan? I know that state employees, a lot of us in private business, mm-hmm. feel like state employees probably got the best health plan anywhere that's costing a lot of money. How have you handled that?
Larry, I'm proud of that. When we walked in earlier, I said in 2011, it was $600 million in the hole. And I'd been on a select committee dealing with it 2 years prior to that. So we were able to take that program and rearrange it, increase some co-pays, deal with I had to go up on the spousal rates and going forward. But the good news is we closed this year out with a $60 million surplus in the state health plan, and I do consider it one of the finer health plans that I've seen. And you know, I had my heart surgery and I used the state health plan, and I was very pleased with how they looked after me.
How do you feel, Rick Wood? I know you've got their teachers and others on the state health plan. How do you feel about it?
I give Senator Apodaca and the General Assembly pretty good marks for helping with the health plan. We're getting some options with the cost for spouses and children is still more than what it should be, but generally they've done a pretty good job with our state health plan. I wanted to bring up one thing. If I'd like to see if Senator Apodaca, I support term limits, and I would term limit myself to 3 terms if the voters give me the opportunity. I would just interested to see what he thinks about term limits.
That's an issue that we hear come up from time to time. Yeah. Not, the federal level, state level, I guess even the local level. How do you feel about term limits?
Sure. I think term limits are wonderful. And I think term limits, as I've gotten down and looked, need to be placed on leadership. Because where you see problems in North Carolina is when a leader has been in too long. Going along those lines, Senator Berger and I put in a bill along with Speaker Tillis a couple of years ago. Speaker Tillis wanted 4 years on leadership. I believe our bill was 6 to 8, so we'd have 2 terms with the governor. I think leadership is where the problems go. There's really not a problem in the state Senate. I looked yesterday of the class I came in with, and I think it's 78% are gone. And the sad part is many of them are dead. So as far as term limits itself, but if you go in like I did and like he would as a minority back row member, it took me 4 years to learn how to get to the building. And then if you do 2 more years, I mean, you're not able to accomplish anything. Longevity has its place, just like he says with teachers. Your older teachers are your best teachers. Well, many times your older legislators are your best legislators. And we took over in 10 or 11. And I went from seat 40 to seat 2, and that changed it. Trust me, I'm not going to be there another 12 years. I don't want to be.
And Larry, he just said that we took over in 2010. I think that's part of our problem in the General Assembly is we versus them. We need less partisanship in Raleigh. We need to work together and find common sense solutions, not blaming the other party. Democrats made mistakes when they were in power, many mistakes. Republicans are making some of the same mistakes now. We got to work together. It is for the people in the future of our country that we should be fighting for, not partisan politics.
Going back to this term limit thing you're talking about, Tom Apodaca, did Speaker Tillis not impose term limits on himself?
He sure did.
I think he did from the very beginning.
4 years, he did. He was going to do two terms. He had a plan, you know, granted, he had a plan going forward, 2 years. I mean, two terms, 4 years. But, you know, you talk about term limits and you think back, and well, how about Jim Hunt? My Lord, I think he's been, he was governor most of my life. I didn't hear Mr. Wood hollering for Jim Hunt to do term limits. You know, it's amazing how that goes. And as far as nonpartisan and partisan, when I saw Raleigh work the best, I'll have to admit, was in the early 2000s when we had joint leadership in the House. That way we had to work together. And he's right. Now you've got 33-17. You know, some items we work together on, a lot of them, it doesn't matter what the other side thinks. So
when it comes to term limits, Rick Wood, should term limits not be up to the voters? I mean, there are term limits out there now. The voters decide how long you're going to be there.
Voters do decide. That's the ultimate term limit, that the voters have that choice. That's correct. And there are people like Martin Nesbitt that served a long time in the state House and then the state Senate. And I know Senator Apodaca said some nice things about him when he passed away, and I appreciate that because he was an excellent senator. But I do know that he was concerned about the direction our state was taking under Senator Apodaca and his leaders in the Senate. But I think overall democracy is better served when you have term limits. My limit I'm setting on myself is just what I feel like. I don't know if that's the perfect amount, but that's what I would impose on myself.
While I've got you both in here, I've been doing this a long time, for well over 40 years, and in all of that time, what we've been talking about with the North Carolina General Assembly is the western part of the state coming out on the short end of the stick. Tom Apodaca, I know we still feel like we do. Is the western part of North Carolina getting its fair share?
I think we're finally getting our fair notice. And, Larry, I'm glad you asked that question. We're able to get more out here now than we have in my 12 years down there. And that's, you know, that's another thing about term limits. You have to be somewhere long enough to get something done. I remember Congressman Taylor brought so much back to this area, but it didn't happen until about his 10th year or so. So, you know, it's not necessarily the evil. And, you know, talking about bipartisan support, I sat with Martin's family at the funeral. My dearest friends in the world were, and my mentors, Senator Tony Rand and Mark Bass, and I exchange calls now. We get along. I mean, it's not what, you know, you guys in the press like to make it look like we're beating each other up. But Martin and I had many a battle on the floor of the Senate and then had many a delightful meal that evening. And so, but yeah, we work together on items. You'll know that this is amazing. We vote together about 93% of the time, Democrats and Republicans, in the North Carolina Senate. But we're judged by that 5-7% that we don't agree on.
Okay, what I'm interested in is what's coming into western North Carolina and how we're going to benefit back here. Because when it comes to transportation, roads, a lot of things for a long time, we've been kind of second rate.
It's been that way a long time. Liston Ramsey was very powerful in the General Assembly at one time, and he helped bring a lot of things, including the Ramsey Center, to Western Carolina University,
where
Senator Apodaca graduated and served as a trustee. And Senator Apodaca is a very powerful guy in the General Assembly right now. And if you think our state is going in the right direction and you like his leadership, then you need to vote to continue him there in the Senate. If you want a different voice, a different view with different priorities that are going to care deeply for public education, for our environment, which we haven't talked about any yet today, for the people, the common man that can't afford to have a paid lobbyist in Raleigh, then you need to look at my candidacy as your next state senator.
Okay, we got 5 minutes left. Let's talk about the environment. That was on my list and just hadn't come up yet. Rick Wood, what would you do on the environmental issue if elected to the state Senate?
Well, I strongly oppose fracking, which is something that Senator Apodaca supports very strongly. The noise, the traffic, the smells, the possible loss of drinking water. Fracking, particularly here in western North Carolina, I think is a bad idea. My opponent voted to fast-track fracking without looking into all the risk, passing regulations to assure the safety of the land, water, and air. The fracking legislation even made it a crime to identify the chemicals used in the fracking process. Under certain circumstances, a landowner could be forced to join a pool of nearby landowners and have fracking take place under their land without their permission. Reports out now, fracking would only bring about 400 jobs to western North Carolina, most of those for outsiders outside North Carolina.
Tom Apodaca.
Oh, goodness. He read the talking points from the environmental groups, didn't he? Well, I'm going to have to, his last statement, 400 jobs, I'm going to say zero. Zero jobs, because they're not going to frack in western North Carolina. That's something, you know, thrown out there by the left, trying to get everybody ginned up. North Carolina geographical studies show that the only realistic place for fracking is down around the Harnett-Lee County area. There is a reserve there. And, you know, we have the toughest fracking laws in the country put in. You cannot, and one of the things to deal with fracking is the forcing the water in. When it comes back out with the gas, how do you dispose of that water? Many places, they put it back in the ground. North Carolina, we do not allow that. And that's where we've seen problems. We think it can be done safely. Now, we can tie that right in to the environmental problem and the biggest worry we have right up the interstate here at Lake Julian. We have a coal ash pond. A huge coal ash pond. And if we were able to convert that plant to natural gas, we wouldn't have a coal ash problem. But the problem is we don't have enough capacity of natural gas to turn that plant over. So we put in the toughest laws again in the country dealing with coal ash. And those ponds have to be dug up and disposed of safely by 2019. Within 5 years. And I think that is wonderful. I think you're going to see the federal regulations come out in December, and you're going to find that our regulations far exceed the federal regulations on coal ash.
Rick Wood, quickly, before we run out of time, is that issue resolved? Is the coal ash Duke Energy issue resolved to your satisfaction?
It's not. It was just a step. My opponent clearly signaled his support of Duke Energy over concerns for the safety of ground drinking water in North Carolina. And I do not support just covering most of the coal ash ponds as he does. I also stand in opposition to his vote that would allow Duke to pass off the cleanup cost to the consumer. I believe government should be on the side of the people, not puppets to Duke Energy. Senator Apodaca has received $68,500 from Duke and Progress Energy over the last 12 years. And he's a Johnny come lately on this issue, I think.
I have to respond to that as he reads his remarks because he can't speak from where he's coming from. I'm not going to be getting anything from Duke Energy now. They're not particularly happy for me. Speaking of Johnny come latelys, his party had it for 140 years. What in the world they do? Not a dang thing. So, and also what we said in that statute is we allow the Utilities Commission to make that decision. That's their purpose.
Most early one-stop voting starts on the 23rd. Go and do the early one-stop voting. If you can't do that, vote on Election Day. Tom Apodaca running for re-election to the State Senate, being opposed by Democrat Rick Wood, local school board member. Thanks to both of you.
You got it.
A lot of good
questions,
a lot of good comments, a lot of good answers, a good dialogue. Thanks to both of you. We'll be back on the 28th with the candidates for sheriff here in Henderson County and another forum. Stay tuned now for news.
This is WHKP Hendersonville, where the heavens kiss the peaks.